Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experiences of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. There is an ancient curse. May you live in interesting times.
Isn't it the original curse?
I think it is, yes. And we are living in very interesting times.
We are living in very strange times indeed. So we're living in coronavirus lockdown. An extraordinary turn of events, which certainly when we started this couldn't really have been predicted, although actually apparently was being predicted. Apparently in the UK, the government was told 3 years ago that a pandemic categorically would arrive. And they knew then that they didn't have enough ventilators. But hey, let's not go into government blame and shame. We could take any amount of podcasts on that, and that's not the purpose of this one.
And I wouldn't play.
No, okay.
I really wouldn't play. I've done my best to give up blame. And one of the things I've been seeing a lot is a polarity in this virus. We are seeing incredible kindness, incredible love. We're seeing workers who haven't been appreciated.
Yes.
But so much passive aggression and blame also coming out. And both of these, they need to come up.
Yes. Yeah.
This has to come up and it has to be owned and it has to be addressed. And both of us in our different parallel ways have been investigating this virus.
Mm.
So, my dear sister, go ahead.
Okay, well, my investigation of this virus, it seems to me that the virus is an emanation, for want of a better word, of divine feminine, of sacred feminine, and a manifestation of something potentially profoundly necessary at this time. I mean, there's a good case. I said it jokingly, but the more times I say it, the more it rings true to me. I said, this is Mama Gaia. She sent us to our rooms and told us to think about what we've been doing. And, you know, as a world, we've just stopped doing so many of the things that we were all telling one another was destroying our planet. You know, everybody's been saying for years that aeroplanes are a terribly bad deal and cruise ships are one of the most incredibly polluting things out there in the ocean. And all of a sudden, almost overnight, almost worldwide, these things have stopped. And as a, if you want to follow through the metaphor of Gaia has sent us to our rooms and told us to start thinking about what we've been doing, it's extraordinary, the correlation. One of the ways in which pollution was the most dreadful was air pollution. This virus is attacking our lungs.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things which was the most insidious and invidious in terms of the ways that the consumer culture has affected the entire globe is our global system of flying around the place and sailing around the place and shipping stuff from place to place and all that. And that these are the very institutions that have been almost instantly brought to their knees by this virus. Again, it's, you know, if this is the hand of the goddess very deliberately saying, look what you've done, children, then the message simply couldn't be any clearer. And, you know, it didn't take long before the skies in China were clearing because so much of their production of all things Chinese was being shut down. It didn't take long for the rivers and the canals in Venice to clear when multiple engines and multiple businesses weren't spewing things out into them. It didn't take long for the town centres of towns all over the world to suddenly hear birdsong again and witness its wildlife. And certainly in England, one of the extraordinarily beautiful things that's been happening is that great swathes of people have suddenly been discovering how much they value nature, how much they value their family, how much they value the capacity to go for a beautiful walk with the one or two or three that they live with and go and count the blessings that are the many downturned faces of the daffodils or the many upturned faces of the primroses or whatever it is. And that, you know, you just couldn't have asked for a better outcome. And from the point of view of our relationship with nature, and it just seemed impossible. Even a month ago, it was impossible that these things might take place. And then coronavirus comes along and just sorts it out. And, you know, that's absolutely not to in any way negate or dishonour the dreadful, dreadful situation that people are in, both with, you know, beloved family members, friends, whatever, dying, with people getting sick, with massive quantities of hardship because businesses have folded. And, you know, there's a lot about this which is shit, really shit, but
there's a lot
about it that's good.
Yes, and I'm grieving at the moment. My cousin's son died a few weeks ago. I won't be able to go to the funeral. I can take some funerals, but very, very small amounts of those. So there's a lot of pain and there's a lot of hardship. But I agree with Susie absolutely that it is a chance to have a look and see what is it we're meant to be doing now? What is the next stage? And I have an online group which is currently meeting once a week. It was meeting once a fortnight, but now we're in lockdown. Well, we're just about entering lockdown, which is why we can do this. But next week, total lockdown, and we will see how it pans out. But we did a meditation together, the online group and I, where we went up to our higher selves and into the Garden of Paradise, and we called the virus to speak to us.
Mm.
And all I said to them was, call the virus. And I was very careful not to be gender specific on the virus. And although I gave some guidance, some questions to ask and to sit with the virus and see what the answer was, every one of those people came back with the feminine.
Mm.
Every one of them came back with saying, it's a healing for the toxic yin.
Wow.
And, you know, the toxic yang, toxic yin. Yes, the yang is very toxic, but we know about that. But the toxic yin is where we haven't allowed and haven't received and haven't appreciated and haven't cherished. And the message that she had for us, some of us saw her as beautiful, some of us saw her as ugly. But when we discussed it, the ugly was just the crone.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't actually mm-hmm. ugly. It was old and wearing a cloak. And her message for every one of us was, please stop fighting me.
Mm.
Now, if that's Gaia, I understand that.
Yeah.
But we do this with every disaster, and I suspect you've noticed this. Everything that we think is wrong, we fight.
Yeah.
There's a fight against cancer. There's a fight against drugs, a war on drugs. We go to war on anything we don't like. It's the classic construct of the ego that the other must be wrong.
Mm.
And the thing about life is a virus. Nothing happens that isn't viral. Evolution is viral. It's something that spreads out all over the world. And we have invited this in many ways because we've gone viral with the internet. We're hoping to go viral with this podcast. But guess what? We're spewing out so much toxicity as well as the love, or at least we have been. And looking at Facebook this last week as we start facing the fact that we're going to get daily briefings for the government. By the time you listen to this, I'm sure all that will be fully established in our lives. But we're... there's so much coming up about the blame and the anger about the government trying to control this, and this is a plot and all the conspiracy theories. And it all comes at the root of this egoic need to have a fight,
mm.
to prove that anything I mean, I'm not a great fan of governments. It's like I'm not a great fan of religious institutions and all that. But there's no doubt that they don't know what they're doing and they're going to be acting in as best they can.
Yeah.
But and also they will make mistakes.
And they are only human.
And they are only human. But already it's the spew of this is wrong. This is wrong. From, and forgive me for this, from people who would not stand up and take the leading vote if they were asked to.
Mm.
And she's come to tell us about this blame, I think. Back to the Garden of Eden, the very story of Adam blaming Eve and Eve blaming the serpent instead of saying, yes, I did.
You got me banged to rights, girl.
You got me banged to rights, girl. And I think this virus is saying, please, will you stand up and say, you caught me banged to rights, girl. I have considered it, and I'm going to try and change things a little bit.
Because that's a beautiful perspective. I like that a lot.
At the beginning of the Bible, it's translated that we were given dominion over the world. And that's a very bad translation of the Hebrew. We're meant to work in partnership and stewardship of the world. We are the only creature that we know of on this planet, and I have to say we know of, that is conscious of being conscious.
Mm.
I know my dogs are conscious.
Mm-hmm.
Dogs nowadays are practically individuating because they're so close to humans. But they're not conscious of the fact that they're conscious. And we are the ones who can take a step back and view what we're doing and make decisions. So I think this is kind of a warning. It is the warning. It's the kind of think about it. And my friend Adam, who's speaks Hebrew, he's a Jewish guy, he's equated this to the plagues of Egypt, but not the one that most people would think, which is the death of the firstborn. That kind of it's actually the plague of the afflicted cattle. And the afflicted cattle, because cattle in those days meant wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all the cattle died. So they had to turn back to the land and find different ways to feed themselves. So I would think it's very viable. And also, it's very interesting how stir-crazy we're getting with the idea of a lockdown when in Africa everything's being eaten by locusts. That's the eighth plague. If everything's eaten by locusts, you will starve to death, end of. We won't.
Yeah.
But guess where all the attention's going?
Yeah, here, anyway. I'm sure in Africa they're a bloody sight more interested in their locusts.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, the notion that we're being told... Oh, sorry, brain trying to go two places. So the notion of acceptance I find very... very true. That really rings true for me. That acceptance is a massive part of this, and it's part of the lesson of it. And again, we're back to all suffering is resistance. And if we don't accept this, we're going to suffer massively.
Mm. Yeah.
There's another little thread that I always like to kind of add to that, which is, but on the other hand, we can't allow acceptance to become complacency, and that just because we are accepting of a status quo doesn't mean that we should simply roll over when whatever authorities are doing what they're doing. And if we don't believe that what they're doing is right, or we don't believe that what they're doing is enough, no, let's not shout and bitch and moan and make war on them and blame them. But let us please call their attention to the ways in which maybe abuses of power, for example,
may
come out of this. And I think it's incredibly important to have, again, that beautiful polarity between acceptance and responsibility. I think there's acceptance must never, ever be a giving away of our power. And it must never be a giving away of our attention and our intention to be equally in power, if you like, because yes, we elect a government, but they are our representatives.
Mm.
They're not.
We elect them. They are our servants.
Yeah.
Yes.
But then there's also is the notion that you say what you were going
to
say.
I think one of the nice things about this podcast is as we get more used to it, we will be willing to have silences.
Yeah.
while we collect what we're saying, because the temptation, I'm a professional broadcaster, I've been trained to just keep talking. And Susie, bless her, hasn't been trained to just keep talking. But so, take your time.
No, I've totally forgotten. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Well, okay, I'll take it off on a strand, which is, I absolutely agree with that. And it must be done with love.
Yeah, of course.
It must be done. That's the one thing I've got against, not actually against Extinction Rebellion. I'm a great fan of Extinction Rebellion. But as with all things, it gets a bit angry. And actually, I'm with Gandhi. Along the lines of go and protest about the salt and just stand there and take the hit and fall, and then the next person stands there.
Well, isn't that the whole point of Extinction Rebellion?
Yes, it is, but some people have been a little... a little blamey. But it's a stage that we've got to go through, because we look at something and go, oh my God, no, that's wrong. And that's absolutely right, that we should say, we should call what's wrong without a doubt.
Mm.
But then we say, but what can we do about it?
Mm.
Not how do we push against it? Because what I'm trying to explain here is that when you engage with something you oppose, it's very difficult not to drop your energy to its level.
Mm-hmm.
And that will end up with fighting policemen in the street, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily know what the answer is, but I'm just sort of putting a plea out, all this to kind of drop the anger at aspects to this and go, yes, some of this is going to suck, some of this is going to be really difficult, but guess what? We've got each other. And I will put my hand out and say, I got you.
Mm.
I'll be there for you.
And that, you know, my goodness, isn't that one of the total and utter blessings of the internet? Along with the capacity to listen to The Vicar and the Witch, obviously, but is that in this lockdown, no matter how many weeks it goes on for, the people who are alone aren't necessarily alone. I mean, I'm thinking in particular of my mum. She lives by herself. She lives a very long way away from me, the other side of the country. I mean, luckily, just down the road from my brother. But she's also one of the vulnerable people. She's a person who is over 80 years old. So she, at the moment, is being cordially invited to stay home by herself for, I can't remember how many weeks it is, but it's at least two, which, you know, my mum's a sociable person. She sings in loads of choirs and she does all kinds of wonderful stuff. She writes newsletters for churches and all sorts of things. And being stuck in the house all by herself, pretty much, if this had happened pre-internet, the last time there was a global pandemic, for example, she would have been unbearably miserable, really unbearably miserable. And now this time we have the opportunity to support one another, to share information, to share, you know, kitten videos, if that floats your boat. Anything, frankly, for a good belly laugh when you're by yourself. As much as anything else, you know, we were talking last time about the you're here to lighten people's hearts, and you know, oh my goodness, the healing capacity of a good belly laugh can't be overstated, frankly. And thank heavens for the internet, and thank heavens for the way that we are viral in that sense, and that we are, you know, so connected. Of course, it's a pandemic. This is, you know, I began with saying that the government had been told that there would be a pandemic 3 years ago. Of course there was going to be a pandemic. We live in a world where everyone's connected, literally, physically, by the flight lines and the produce lines and the interweb lines.
Mm.
And there's, you know, there's no corner of the earth you can't look into now on Google spy in the camera thing, whatever it's called. And That's a thing which we all accept very gratefully indeed in the West, you know, is woohoo, I can now watch whatever it is I want to on telly. But, and there are ways in which I can see that it is potentially a curse, you know, as when my children were little, I was very worried about how much time might they be spending on the internet when they were older. I mean, as it turns out, actually, they've all become the most beautiful, kind, rational, unintellect, internet addicted young men you could possibly wish for. But I was scared when they were little. And on the other hand, it's this fabulous way to reach into a home the other side of the country and go, hey, you all right? Let's have a chat with faces. It's amazing.
Or if you don't want to have the faces, just the messages as well.
Well, in which case you could just go to the old telephone. But messages,
that kind of thing. For example, it's difficult to know what to say to my cousin at the moment because his son is dead, died of a heroin overdose. And there's so much going on around that. And he finds it quite difficult to talk because he's very, very angry. Mm. But a daily text message keeps him knowing that I am there, and I will ring once a week so as not to impose. There is, of course, the danger that we will only just get into messages instead of the actual contact. And I think the actual contact face-to-face, as you say, is incredibly important.
And back to the theme where we were discussing polarity last time, oh my goodness, if anything's ever going to persuade us how insanely important it is to be able to touch skin, rub noses, flutter eyelashes on one another's cheeks, it's going to be being locked in for a week or two.
Yes. Yes.
Or this, three or four, who knows, you know.
Yes, it's a very interesting time. Well, I'm sorry, I'm going back to the beginning, but I think one of the important things which it would be good if it taught us, which of course it's not at the moment because we're buying everything over the web, we're still buying stuff, is to stop over-entertaining ourselves.
Sadly, I'm not sure that that's going to come
out. No, I don't think it's going to happen either. But I remember when I was a child, somebody saying to me, which really hacked me off at the time, which was to be bored means you have a lack of inner resources. And the downside of the web and all Netflix and all that kind of thing is you can just go for entertainment the whole time. I want to be entertained. I don't want to think. I don't want to get through this. I want to throw the pain on one side and just distract myself. Now, I've done that many times, and it's a good thing to do if there is no resolution to what's going on. But we have got into a perpetual cycle of entertain me, feed me, do this. And I think that might be the toxic yin angle. Of sitting, not doing the cooking, not being aware of the ingredients. One of the things that's going on at the moment, we've got this panic buying of loo roll and pasta and stuff in the supermarkets. And because the supermarkets are running out, simply not because the stuff isn't there, it's just the distribution hasn't happened yet, but people aren't necessarily seeing that. People are starting to cook with ingredients they haven't cooked with before, or cooking at home, or cooking with a family. And that's beautiful. And making meals out of things that you wouldn't necessarily expect. I made a store cupboard supper that was completely unique the other day, and we're going to do it again because it really, really worked.
Great.
And I've always been a bit of a forager, but wild garlic and nettle soup is delicious.
It certainly is. It's one of my absolute favourites. Yeah, I mean, that thing of the lack of imagination that could potentially come from being constantly entertained. Again, that was the thing that I was genuinely really alarmed by when my children were little. I grew up with my wonderful Irish granny had an aphorism for literally every imaginable eventuality, and she used to say only the boring are bored. Look over her glasses at you in that way that says you are therefore boring, but surely you're not boring, so go away this minute. But as I understand it, there's loads of, you know, scientific evidence, in inverted commas, or social science, I'm not sure, that says that creativity is born of boredom. Because if we don't, boredom basically is the word we've got for the space, in many ways, between activities. You know, if we're not having a meditative practice or whatever, bored's what you are when you're not doing, potentially.
Mm.
And if you're constantly doing, there's no room for creativity. Original creativity, the first spark of creativity. Obviously, doing could be creativity, because when you're being creative, you are doing. But for that original inspired idea, you know, inspire, to breathe, to give breath to. If we don't go back to that place where all we're with is our breath, then we're not going to have that new vision, that new idea, that new thing to go trundling off with. And if we are sat on the sofa watching Netflix or whatever it is all the time, then maybe that doesn't happen. I don't know. Mm. I don't know. I'm not a great screen watcher.
No.
So I don't know.
No. I have found an increase in the last 20 years of people when they come to me for counselling or spiritual direction, of saying to them, what is your passion? And they're not knowing.
Wow.
And that has increased. And you say, well, you don't have to have a passion, but it's nice to have something that you want to be doing, something that brings you back joy. And of course, there's children and that kind of thing. But for women of our age, though I think you're at least 10 years younger than me, entering the crone years, or in the crone years, the children should have left home. And you have the time to be bored. And I'm looking at my mother, and she's amazing. She's 92, and she has been self-isolating effectively for the last 15 years anyway. And she watches a little bit of television, listens to the radio, reads books, talks to her friends on the phone, is entirely happy on her own, and will not even look at the internet, won't have it in the house. And but she was a child of the war.
Mm.
She had to entertain herself. And she had to work outside on the allotment. And she's also strong, as so many of that generation are, because they ate so well. They ate sparingly during the war, and they had to forage.
Yeah.
We don't talk about the fact that they will have foraged, but of course they will have done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Why would you not eat it when it's growing in every hedge?
Whereas nowadays we can just get a takeaway of monosodium glutamate and sugar.
Yeah.
And it stodges you.
Mm.
It really does stodge you. So I'm sounding very much like, oh, in our day.
Well, I had a great expression the other day. I was talking to a friend about, you know, the mothers and the fact that older people were supposed to self-isolate. And apparently he told his mother that she was supposed to self-isolate. And she just turned around and went, I lived through the war, you know.
There's a lot of that.
Yes. Stuff that. Anyway, I want to go back to your idea that people no longer know what their passion is, because I actually have a bit of a passion for passion, in that I know some people who fall into that category of, or have done, of not feeling that they clearly know what their passion is. And I really perceive that as an ailment of the material age, because we are indoctrinated to believe that our passion must be something to do with doing, and that therefore if your passion is a being thing and not a doing thing, so back to that conversation about active and receptive, masculine, feminine, diddly da, that the passions for being aren't acknowledged. And that, so for example, this is quite an overt example, but if, for example, your passion is something like for justice or for your fellow humans, and you just have a total passion to support those you love, that can be a passion, that can be a total and utter calling. But when someone asks that person, what's your passion, in the face of the one who wants to play for the football team, or the one who wants to grow up to be a fireman or a rock star or whatever.
Passion for achievement?
Yeah. And for achievement in a world that only values the things we can buy to a degree.
Mm.
Although, as you mentioned earlier, I believe that lockdown is going to show us very, very firmly that there are things to value that are way beyond anything you could ever buy.
Mm.
And that this is going to show us that actually the single most important people in our society are the doctors, the nurses, the bin men, the people who work behind the cash desk at the food store, the people who pick the food, the people who grew the food. You know, why are these guys not millionaires instead of the ones sitting in offices creating yet more bollocks that we don't need?
Mm.
Excuse me.
All right, I did wanky bollocks the other day. I suspect we'll get a lot more profane as the series goes.
Maybe
on.
We ought to put a little thingy at the beginning. There is on a podcast which I love, which says that there is a conversation between adults, and so adult language will be used. Little Warner on the box.
There was a lovely piece in one of the religious journals which was posted online, which I read, which basically said that no, Christianity has nothing to say about this.
Why not?
And I thought, oh, that's interesting. I'm going to have to read that one. And it said, because this is something to sit with.
Oh,
okay. This is part of the crucifixion, if you like. This is part of the stuff that we don't understand. And as long as we need to understand everything and rationalise it and put it in a box, we're never going to be at peace. And I thought, actually, yes, I like that.
That's wise.
It is wise. And the truth is we can't, Joseph Campbell again, he said, you can't conceive of God, let alone think about God, let alone speak of God. Because the concept is ineffable. You know, what is it that created everything? One of my favourite little moments with another vicar, this was before, long before I was ordained, he said that he was absolutely certain that there was no other life in the universe. And I was just thinking, what a waste of space. You know, God created all this vastness just so he could focus on some funny little forked creatures on one blue-green planet at the lost end of a spiral galaxy. I don't think so. So this divinity being, great mother, great kahuna, whatever it is way beyond anything we can possibly conceive of.
Yeah.
And guess what? It has aspects to it, like the spirits, or I'd probably call them angels, that are personal, that will talk to you, that will carry your impulses with them, and that will bring the answer to prayer. And by the way, my view on prayer is prayer doesn't change God, prayer changes me. Prayer gets me into alignment so that the grace that is always there can flow to me.
Mm.
It's difficult saying that sometimes because people will say, you mean I'm out of alignment? And I say, well, you and me both.
Mm.
You know, I do a meditation every day, and sometimes in that meditation I get in alignment. Other times I just think about the shopping list.
Mm.
And so we're always a little out of alignment. So I think the virus is desperately trying to bring us closer to some kind of alignment, closer to being bored and then finding out what we want to do with that boredom.
Yeah, and how we want to, what do we want to be? I mean, here we all are as a virus, and your discussion of the vastness of the cosmos makes me remember an analogy which I came up with some years ago, and at the time people found terribly shocking, which is that at the moment, if you perceive Gaia to be one body, the body of our Earth, one sacred being, then the way that Western consumer culture is behaving upon her is like a virus.
Oh, yeah.
We're insanely destructive. We're hacking down forests and polluting rivers and messing up the sky and eating everything and killing everything and blah, blah, blah. If that ain't a virus, what is? And if she is one body, one being, what do we do with viruses? What do with viruses, people? We attack them. And so the fact that you and I are sitting here going, this virus appears to be calling us into receptivity, into acceptance, into go to your room and think about what you've been doing, then really, really, if you believe in a retributive...
See, I can pronounce it because I've had to deal with it.
That, if you believe in that kind of divinity, then, my goodness, we better hope that same divinity likes offerings and prayers and all those other things, because otherwise we are the virus.
Yep. Cue Robert Heinlein. If I can find the book, I've put it down somewhere.
You had him on your phone.
Oh, yes, I had him on my phone. Thank you so much. Didn't bring the book. There's a quotation that my husband found today in the Robert Heinlein book he's reading, which just sums up what you're saying. Let me find the... I'll have to come back to it because I switched the phone off because I was being very responsible.
You were being very
responsible. Well, I'm going to make another quotation then before then, which adds it up, because I just printed these off today. And Rabbi Lawrence Kushner, he's an Orthodox Jewish rabbi. All creation is one person, one being, whose cells are connected to one another within a medium called consciousness.
Well done, that rabbi.
Yeah, and that's actually what all mystics know. Right. I can find it now because the phone has miraculously turned itself on. And here is a quotation from Robert Heinlein. The most preposterous notion that Homo sapiens ever dreamt up is that the Lord God of creation, shaper and ruler of all the universes, plural, wants the saccharine adoration of his creatures, can be swayed by their prayers and becomes petulant if he does not receive this flattery. Yet this absurd fantasy, without a shred of evidence to bolster it, has been the expedition of the oldest, largest and most grow productive industry in all of creation. I couldn't read that last bit because I haven't got my reading specs on.
That is quite some description of, I presume he's speaking about the Christian church there at the
end. No, it's on another planet. But is humanity living on another planet? But still this idea that God is retributive. Now, the prophets are quite clear if you read the prophets, but nobody reads the prophets. I don't know why they don't read the prophets. But there's a lot of doom and gloom in the prophets, because basically the prophets are saying, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. And they do that, and then something goes wrong.
And the prophets get to say, I told you so.
And the prophets go, oh, for crying out loud. And everybody suffers, and there's a famine. And then God comes along and loves them through it.
Mm-mm.
God always gives restorative justice. And COVID-19, I believe, is restorative justice.
Yes.
It may hurt, but that's this mistake we have about hell. Yes, there's the underworld. And there may be a place that souls go to process what they've done in this life, absolutely. But the mistake about hell is the fires of hell. They are the healing fires of grace that bring restorative justice, and they hurt like
blazes.
Thank you. They hurt like hell, but they're to heal and to cleanse, and they're not eternal. This idea of building up, this idea of eternal hellfire if you do the wrong thing, it's just a human projection. There is something so vast, so extraordinary, that it hasn't got the time or energy to send a human being to hell. And in Christianity, this is the thing that gets me, and I cannot understand it. How can anybody call themselves a follower of this kind man and believe that they could go to heaven and be happy when one person they loved was in hell?
Totally. Totally.
It's just not sustainable.
Yeah.
And this is the biggest issue that Christianity has twisted for years, which is the punitive, retributive God.
But I'm gonna keep waving this one in your face. So that if hell was made up in the 6th century, where are these blazing, cleansing fires of grace?
6th century? I think it was made up before then. But the St. Augustine thing about the original sin, you mean? Or
No. Oh. I'm talking about hell as a place.
Right. Fair enough.
Hell as a place didn't exist until the 6th century. When
did I say that?
Oh, definitely.
Oh, right. I better go back. It was certainly made up. Yes, definitely. Where are these healing and fires of grace from?
No, if you're saying
she's completely bullversed me there.
If you're saying that not hell and damnation, but yes, hell healing fires of grace may be a place that maybe people get sent to have some hideous pain.
Oh no! The healing fires of grace come while we're alive.
Ah.
This is a healing fire of grace.
Okay.
It's offered to us. I think after we die, the first book I was ever given after Henry died, my first husband, was called Testimony of Light, which was a channeled book from a nun who died and was talking to her friend on earth. And everybody who's got some experience of life after death or near-death experiences backs up, says this is the most accurate book there is. Helen Graves, Testimony of Light, very good. She says that when you go through, you shed the ego and your soul realizes what you did.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hell. The realization of the mistakes that you made.
Are there any mistakes, really?
Causing others pain.
Okay.
But as soon as you realize that, this is similar to the Buddhist bardo. When you die, there's 3 days while the etheric dissolves, when you face your own demons.
Mm.
And if you believe they're external demons, the Buddhist teaching is that you will race back into another incarnation without processing. So it would be the same thing of when you die, you go, you have to if you like, face your demons, which would be purgatory, I think. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you go, oh boy, and take responsibility, coming back to the cross again, then it's over. You're okay. You're through. I mean, I don't remember being there. I'm sure I've been there many a time.
Mm.
I don't remember it. So I'm talking theory here, but that sits quite well with me. So just take responsibility once you die.
To quickly go back to my question, are there any mistakes? I'm not some kind of committed to the idea that everything's predestined. Far from it. What I mean is that to me, life is one great experiment. And that to me, the divine, because the divine is on the one hand love and amoral. If the divine was, to me, and this is not some, as far as I'm aware, sort of great teaching from within witchdom, this is just my own thoughts on the matter, that if the goddess is everything, and if we just confine it for a moment to Earth rather than the cosmos, but it can be iterated out any amount, if everything is love and everything is God, then it is only intention that can possibly carry evil. And intention is a human thing in the carrying of evil. And that, therefore, everything that's playing out really is the goddess playing. She's playing at being embodied, at being in matter. And so if you extrapolate that out to the nth degree, then the goddess playing is also war and famine and all those other things. And that, therefore, one has to arrive at the place of seeing that spirit is intrinsically amoral, because it's not saying this is right and this is wrong. It's just saying this is. And that it's also clearly love. That's our experience as human beings of, you know, mystics throughout time, is that to be connected with the divine is to be connected to love. And that, therefore, if it's both amoral and love, whether or not it's a bad thing or a good thing, what you're doing, what you're experiencing, how you're receiving it, is what are you making it mean in this great experimental dance of life? And what did you intend by what you did, what you said, and what you thought?
That's beautiful. I like that very much. Yes. Well, it's the same as if God is omnipotent, how can he be good?
Yeah.
Because then we've got suddenly got the he back there again, haven't we? If God is omnipotent, God can still be love.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally think love is good.
Oh, I'm so with you.
And also sin, the words for sin, hamartia in Greek, means to miss the mark. It's an archery term.
Wow.
Now, I do think there is intended hurt. Mm-hmm. That people do. And I did some many years ago, I did a Life Between Lives meditation hypnotherapy with a friend of mine who was doing that work, and she needed people to practice on for free. And I thought I was hypnotized under hypnotherapy for about 30 minutes. It turned out to be 4 hours.
Whoa.
During which time I've discovered my relationship with my ex and my mother and came to understand them.
Yeah.
And that understanding changed the way I treated them immediately.
Hmm.
And I'm not quite sure how that connects back, because I've lost my train of thought, because we've been talking for way longer than 30 minutes.
Oh dear,
minutes
have
now,
we?
And we got
done it
absolutely
again.
Off the subject of the COVID-19. But I think this intention, what I learned from this was that I had intended to leave my wife in a previous life to go off to war when I didn't need to. Mm. Which caused her great harm. And the understanding of that in this life, with the belief that wife in the previous life is my mother in this life, really healed a lot of the wounds that I had taken on around my mother. Because it made me realise that I'd come back to assist her through this life, because she was a suicide in the previous one.
Mm.
And that much of my behaviour had been very selfish. And I would say it was the healing fires of grace that came for me through cancer, which was horrible. But my God, I'm so glad I had it.
Yeah, yeah, same. Yeah.
And I think we probably better stop on that.
Oh, it's so frustrating. Let's do another one soon. Thank you for listening, dear people.
Thank
Goodbye.
You.